If you would turn back in your bulletin one page, there is a prayer there by Creating the Church of Tomorrow, simple by Archbishop Oscar Romero. I would like us to read that prayer together. It helps us
now and then to step back and take the long view. The kingdom is not only beyond our efforts, it is even beyond our vision. We accomplish in our lifetime only a tiny fraction of the magnificent enterprise that is God's work. Nothing we do is complete, which is another way of saying that the kingdom always lies beyond us. No statement says all that could be said. No prayer fully expresses our faith. No confession brings perfection. No pastoral visit brings wholeness. No program accomplishes the Church's mission. No set of goals and objectives includes everything. This is what we are about. We plant seeds that one day will grow. We water seeds already planted, knowing that they hold further crowns. We lay foundations that will lead further development. We provide yeast that produces effects far beyond our capabilities. We cannot do everything, and there is a sense of liberation in realizing that. This enables us to do something, and to do it very well. It may be incomplete, but it is a beginning, a step along the way, an opportunity for the Lord's grace to enter into the rest. We may never see the end results, but that is the difference between the master builder and the worker. We are workers, not master builders, and ministers, not messiahs. We are prophets of the future, not our own. Amen.
1985 marked the 20th anniversary of the assassination of Oscar Romero. He was killed on March 24th, 1985, a day after he had publicly criticized the El Salvadoran military. That in itself, that act of criticism, was a dangerous and a terrifying step. Romero begged and asked for international intervention to stop a civil war that was killing 300 people each month. His bishops, except for one, turned their backs on him, and they secretly sent a message to Rome accusing Romero of being political and seeking publicity. Romero refused to attend any government function until the repression of the people stopped. Now that got him a lot of enemies. He was, in many ways, a very surprising archbishop. He was a conservative person. He was a pious bookworm. He was not political, and he opposed liberation theology and had written to the Pope criticizing liberation theology. However, 3 weeks after he was elected as archbishop, an event changed his life. One of his priests was murdered. He went to the funeral and found out that the priest was murdered because he was helping the peasant farmers organize a co-op. So he faced the villagers and they asked him if he would stand with them in their difficulty. All he could offer them was a weekly radio broadcast of sermons. Sermons in which he assured people that the atrocities might not cease, but that the Church of the Poor would live on. He wrote Jimmy Carter a letter, and he said, "You say you are a Christian. If you are really a Christian, please stop sending aid to the military here because they use it only to kill the people." The letter had very little effect. And he said to the people, if they kill all the priests, and you are left without a priest, you must become God's microphone. Each one of you must become a prophet. The U.S. was sending about $1.5 million every day as aid into El Salvador, mostly military aid. And he openly challenged the El Salvadoran army, and he said, brothers, you're killing your fellow peasant. And he went on to say that no soldier is obligated to obey an order that is contrary to the will of God. There was thunderous applause from the soldiers. But he had done a dangerous thing. He had invited the soldiers to mutiny. A few days before his murder, he told a reporter, you can tell the people that if they succeed in killing me, I forgive and bless those who do it. Hopefully they will realize that they are wasting their time. The bishop will die, but the Church of God will never perish. At his funeral, 250,000 people showed up. A bomb exploded and killed 40. The prayer you have before you was written by Romero. And what I'd like to do now is ask you to take that prayer, meditate on it, reread it quietly, and if there's something that strikes you, then please make a comment about it.
In the part about the seeds, I would start with the implication that we may end up reaping a harvest that the people who come before us have sown and watered. We can't take credit for that.
Phrase, we may never see the end results. I would change it, we will never see the end results. And I guess this allows our imagination to carry us on find that very hopeful.
Romero must have realized the fate. He was not going to see the results of much that he did in the way he talks about planting seeds and laying foundations, providing yeast. I think generally we like to see the results of what we're doing. And to come to terms with that, that it isn't always going to be that way. The Africans hate to plant trees because they say it may die before the tree will ever bear fruit. And a long attitude to take.
I like the line, we cannot do everything, and there's a sense of liberation in realizing that this enables us to do something and to do it very well. And John and I have just been engaged in this project of housing the 6 Chinese mainland students, and they left day before yesterday on the 30th. And that was a great enterprise for John and me. We had a lot of cleaning and real grungy work to do because they don't clean the way we do. The stove was a terrible mess if you want to know the details. And so on and so on. So you get discouraged when you have to do all this kind of work, but it's sort of liberating that we don't know what the consequence of their stay in Vancouver will be. And I, as you've said, we may never know. We probably will never know. But at least we did something.
I think this prayer also shows us how incomplete we are and how complete God is, and that what we do still matters a great deal and that we can make a difference.
In that vein, it says up here, nothing we do is complete, which is another way of saying that the kingdom always lies beyond us. I have a bit of a problem with this sentence because Jesus says the kingdom is here now. And perhaps not in its political or outer manifestation as much, but in our hearts, the kingdom is here. It's easy for me to say that. We live in a country of peace and prosperity, and it's much, much harder, it's much harder in this time to recognize the moments of kingdom living.
Yeah, I was going to comment on that, that this was written in war-torn El Salvador, so there was a need for hope for a kingdom.
I admire his courage to sow those seeds, knowing that that he very likely will not see the harvest, and not being discouraged.
I think it very much is aligned with what I understand the mission statement of the Mennonite Church is, you know, that it's God's work. And we can only see what God is doing and then see what we are doing.
We must constantly, this brings out so strongly the fact, you must constantly live in hope. Because you can't look beyond to see what I see this every day in my work with children. You know, they represent such a powerful image of how you don't know what any child is going to become. As a parent, you parent with the expectation that your child is going to grow up healthy, fulfilling the goals and the dreams that you have, but you don't know. You never know. You never know what happens tomorrow. But you must, you know, I think as Christians especially, must constantly live with that hope.
Mm-hmm.
This prayer brings up for me the paradox between being and doing. And clearly the prayer is one of doing. We're called to do this and do that, and often we become tired and weary with that emphasis. And then there's the other emphasis, that of being. And here the idea of the kingdom is within us despite all the disarray around us. And somehow we need to find a balance. And I suppose in a war-torn country, we're drawn to trying to be, or trying to create a better world out of discord.
Phrase, we cannot do everything, and there is a sense of liberation in realizing that. Brings me to the oft-quoted phrase, think globally and act locally.
See a little bit of the fruit which you have sown. Maybe good, maybe not so good, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But at least we have a little bit of an idea of it.
I'd like to make a comment. I was there about 6 months after I was there in the spring of 86, and I met some young priests that were working with refugees, and they had a real mission. They had the fervor. And a few years later, in 92, when the peace accords were signed, the country was changed. The whole atmosphere was changed.
How was it changed?
People could speak freely. It was freedom. Yeah. It was a very scary place before.
Thank you. I would encourage you to keep this prayer through the year and read it periodically. I think it might be a good reminder for all of us.